It's time for 41 is the Mic, a weekly Chiefs podcast with Nick Jacobs of KSHB 41 and Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. 41 is the Mic starts now.
Welcome, everyone. Yes, you are back with KSHB's 41 is the Mic. I am Matt Derrick, alongside legal tampering window enthusiast Nick Jacobs. And Nick didn't even get to the legal tampering window before the Kansas City Chiefs got them some things done. They gave us the amuse-bouche a couple of days ago with Drew Tranquil's contract getting done. And then Saturday night, out of the blue, Chris Jones is going to be a Chief. For at least 3 years, it looks like, maybe five, depending on who you how you count numbers in the NFL. We're going to find out when the details of the contract come out. But first thoughts, Nick. I mean, what comes to your mind? I mean, how much relief are Chiefs fans feeling right now?
I think for some of them, a lot. For others, I think it's probably 50-50 overall. Yeah, I mean, whenever I saw them sign Drew Tranquil to what they did, I'm like, okay. Then they know the number where Chris is at, and then they know the number where Snead would be at, and they're okay with either one, whichever scenario goes which way. So I think that had a lot to play with it in terms of that gave me the belief that they at least know from a financial perspective of what they were setting up, where each guy's at. So then I'm like, okay, so they're confident in one of them. Otherwise, Tranquil still waits, and they don't do it as quickly as they did financially. So once I got that locked up, I was like, all right, then one of two is going to happen between Chris and Snead, and then Chris Jones stuff starts leaking out Saturday night before 10 p.m., and then you're like, okay, so that tracks on everything about why Tranquil got done, because they knew where they were number-wise with what they're going to spend and what Clark may be dishing out in terms of signing bonus or, anything escrow-wise. So then that kind of, you're like, okay. So then they're pretty good at this point and comfortable with where they're at. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, we'll talk more about Chris here, obviously. But, I mean, hey, they got the two key things they were after, and the Chiefs went in back-to-back Super Bowls. And trying to go for a third, I think, really helped Chris be able to get over that hump financially.
Yeah, just touching on Tranquil real quick, I mean, you mentioned two big deals right there. I mean, the Chiefs going into this offseason, their two biggest questions about addressing immediately were Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed. But no doubt, I mean, in that next group of priorities, Drew Tranquil was at the top as a guy that they wanted to keep. Pretty good deal to me. I mean, he is being paid well. I mean, that's obviously starter level money in the NFL. He's going to be making more than Nick Bolton right now, but it does give you an indication about what you have to pay to keep Nick Bolton, because Nick Bolton will make more money than that when he becomes a free agent next year. And how important is that? Because now, probably I feel like even lost in this a little bit is that, by having Tranquil signed for two more seasons, you've kind of at least have insurance that if things go south with Nick Bolton next year in free agency, you've got a Mike linebacker potentially for 2025 if you don't get Nick Bolton back in the fold.
That is an excellent point, Matt Derrick. It's like you're looking ahead as the Chiefs front office always has to do. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the key part of the whole thing is that with him, like you said, with Tranquil, he has so much versatility that you couldn't not keep that on the roster. You really had to protect that and keep that there. And then also the ability that he could play Mike, whether Bolton's hurt or whatever may transpire down the road. Like that's why he earned the number that he did, because of, he didn't earn that type of number the year before out on the open market. So for him to get that number, that was because of what he showcased and just how well he did. And the Swiss Army knife that he's been for the Chiefs. So, yeah, no, I mean, I was ecstatic when I saw that Tranquil got done. And so I was like, okay, that's great on that part. And that I'm happy to see that one. Or as ecstatic as I could be given last week.
Completely understand there. And, and Tranquil, I mean, it's like I said, it's a relatively affordable deal. There is some money on the back end of it. I mean, he has got a $3 million cap hit next year, $8.5 million next year, but 3 years, $19 million is not bad. It pales in comparison to the 3 years, $95 million that Chris Jones is going to make. And obviously, that's the highlight number of that is the fact that, you know, 3 years, 95 in the first, in the all that money coming in the first 3 years. Asterisk, it's a 5 year contract, apparently. We still have not seen the official details as we're recording this. And, you know, and that's the nuts and bolts of it that amuses me because we haven't also seen an overall number yet. You know, so far we're just getting the guaranteed money, and that's obviously the biggest deal of all. This matches the money that Aaron Donald got in the first, you know, for the 3 year contract that he signed. Now there was talk, Nick, of course, you know, that the Rams had to pay a Aaron Donald retirement tax. Didn't really have that with Chris Jones. So the Chiefs pretty much paid market value for Chris Jones, don't you think?
Yeah, they did. And so you're hoping those 3 years pay off. You're hoping he's able to kind of maintain what he did during that 3 year time and that you're paying for who he'll continue to be versus what he previously did. I mean, I'm not going to say he didn't earn the money because he was going to earn that money on the open market no matter what. So, like, you know, the Chiefs are and may have gotten more on the open market. So, I think there was two numbers that the Katz brothers and Chris wanted. The guarantees, I want them where Donald's at, and I want the average above where Aaron Donald's at. And then once those two things happened, boom, that's when everything got leaked at that point. So, and like I said, the Chiefs trying to go for a three-peat, I think really helped that out. Because Chris Jones is kind of, you know, Chris Jones is one of the leaders on the defense, and he's kind of been the pillar of that defense, given how long he's been with his team since 2016. So, I mean, all that combined, you know, like that was going to be a part of that piece/puzzle is that, you know, Chris, this defense looks a lot different if you don't have a good Chris Jones on it. Like at that point, then you're like, okay, who the heck's our three tech? Where do we get a three tech from? Can you outbid, you know, anybody in the market for Christian Wilkinson? And then, you know, then you're kind of putting all your eggs into the Christian Wilkinson basket, and then you're hoping he pans out, and then you've got to go in the draft, and you're going to be stretched thin at what you need to get a defensive tackle, wide receiver, offensive tackle, and anything else that you may have on your list in terms of pass rush or if you're wanting to add depth at other spots. So with that, you don't have to worry about the starting three tech. It's just a matter of now, hey, is there an heir apparent that becomes best player available that they could get behind him and start working that person in as a three tech in case Chris got hurt, but allow them to learn under Joe Collin and Chris Jones together. That would be the best of both worlds in that front. But you're going to have offensive tackle and wide receiver issues too that you're going to likely have to address in the first couple rounds of the draft. So it maintained that flexibility to where you're not fighting on three different fronts to get potentially three different starters that can have impact on your team immediately. So, I mean, you know, that part of it, that part of the puzzle like that had to happen. So, and also I think for Chris, I mean, above everything else, Chris can now be seen around the league by the number that he's potentially going to get, that he's one of the best at his position. So like, boom, that's done and over with. Veach and the Chiefs made that happen. Then on top of that, he's now one of the top three in the organization. He's earned those stripes to be that. So, I mean, look, I'm hoping we see much happier Chris Jones at press conferences. He may not like talking to me and everything, but, I mean, he's one of the leaders of the team. They brought him out every week. So I'm just kind of – I'm selfishly hoping we get more of a happy-go-lucky Chris Jones because that's a funner press conference. But, I mean, like, you know, he's up there now. Like, it's like the, in terms of the Chiefs Super Bowl Rushmore, it's Andy Reid. And it's Steve Spagnuolo, it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Travis Kelce, and Chris Jones. Like, and, you know, Brett Veach, obviously, you have him on there too. But I'm saying, like, those guys, like, those are kind of the pillars of what made the Super Bowls happen.
Yeah, and you bring up an interesting point because I mean, even though Chris has been Chris at times in the last few years, I mean he's been kind of mercurial at times, and there's been maybe a little bit of a roller coaster of Chris Jones because you like you mentioned, we sometimes get somber Chris Jones, and I've always wondered how much of that was definitely he was being told to tamp down the personality. For free agency to try and drive up his market value, make him appear more serious. I've never believed that was necessary. I mean, I believe that part of the value of Chris Jones is his energy and his personality. So I don't think that was the case, but maybe this is going to be the weight off his shoulders that he needs to just go ahead and go be himself. And if that's the case, I'm all for it because there's nothing better to me as a reporter than Chris Jones when he's on a roll. So I'm looking forward to that. You mentioned, hey, Chris is getting to be an older player. And I was looking up, Pro Football Reference has gone through and, trying to find sacks of players before, sacks became an official stat in 1982. So I was looking at it. The most sacks by a defensive tackle since 1982, when it became an official statistic, was Randy White in 1984 with 12 and a half. Even PFF, Pro Football Reference, with going through all those years of trying to find sacks from the old days, they've found 14 seasons with a player in their 31 or 32 seasons that have had double-digit sacks. And I think all but, gosh, like five or six of them, Jason Hatcher, which is a name I did not expect to be on this list, is one of those. He had 11 sacks in 2013. Wayne Martin had a couple of double-digit sacks seasons. Randy White did too. John Randall had one back in 99, 10 sacks. It's not, I mean, easy to be a productive sack master as you get older. And certainly once you get to the age that Chris is going to be in this, the second and third years of this contract.
Yeah, and that's why the more help you can get along that defensive line and having a person who can rotate in and kind of help him get some snaps off overall in a game, I think those are going to be key for helping him kind of maintain who he is as a player production-wise, and obviously not having him take every single rep in training camp and, being mindful of his body just like you need to be with Travis Kelce's. I think doing all those, I think will pay, they'll make a big difference. And if you're investing this in him, just like you invested in Mahomes and you invested in Kelce overall, like you got to do everything you can to protect those three guys because of how valuable they've been, both from an experience perspective and then also just kind of what they can do on the football field and how much they were all impactful in helping you have three Super Bowls. So yeah, that's the next phase in that regard is what do you surround Chris with to help him be able to maintain his level of production for the next 3 years, but then also kind of how do you kind of help him be able to not have such intense wear and tear that kind of burns you on this contract in any way?
I know it's kind of maybe a little early to ask this question because, like we mentioned at the top, we don't know all of the details of this contract yet. We really only know the 3 years, $95 million guaranteed in the first 3 years. But from what we've learned so far, is there anything that has surprised you about this contract? I mean, I'm kind of surprised that the Chiefs finally and Chris finally got a deal that a lot of us thought maybe he should have agreed to, and maybe the Chiefs should have agreed to a year ago.
Well, I think I'm not surprised by any part of it. I think the Chiefs finally accepted that he was going to get that same number on the open market, and that's the whole reason this got done. Because, I mean, literally, they were less than 48 hours away, from being able to finally truly test the market and let Chris see what a team like the Raiders would have paid for him, what potentially what a team like the Bengals would have paid for him, the Texans. Is there another team out there that we don't, that we're not sure about that would have come out and offered a significant amount of money? Like all those teams combined, I think they all would have been in play for him, and I think they all would have had significant interest in him. And the fact that the Chiefs don't have to worry about that anymore should give them a lot of peace of mind in that regard. And then they don't have to worry about trying to find their next three tech or not necessarily trying to find, but have to find the next three tech that could give them that production, or along the offensive or defensive line, having to find a guy who could take that type of attention and double teams and everything combined and really kind of put them in a spot to where they were going to have to hit it out of the park, versus now they're like, hey, we bought a little bit more time to find the heir apparent. Because part of this is, in my opinion, is when they signed the last contract with them, they had set it up to have an escape hatch to get out after year three. And they had that opportunity. And they during that time, they never really invested in finding another three tech that could potentially replace Chris. So it never got to this point if they had to do this type of thing. And they kind of really left themselves in a spot to where you were going to put yourself in a significant hole if you didn't get this done. And I mean, that's easy. You know, I think that's something we all recognize, is Chris's impact on this team and what he means. But then you also got to kind of recognize that they never really invested in a three tech behind him. If they needed to walk, they weren't going to be able to.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Chris played himself into that spot. You mentioned that 4-year deal where there was an out after three. I mean, Chris earned that fourth year. I mean, they made it so that there was no letting him get off of that. I mean, they had to have him. I mean, obviously this deal comes with some risk, but at the bottom line, I think this is exactly what both sides needed, right?
Yeah, it's the, if you're wanting to get a three-peat, not having Chris Jones makes it a little bit tougher, and you really have to, you're putting a lot of pressure on Joe Collin to be able to develop that overall production along the defensive line, and you're having to invest heavily, whether in free agency and draft, to be able to make up that difference, and you're just going to have a lot of things go right to make that happen. So at this point, the only thing you're really having to worry about is Chris Jones being able to stay healthy over the 3 years, and what do you have to do as an organization to help him be able to do that, and can you still find some pieces behind him to develop in case that does occur?
With these two deals done, these are, and I'm going to count Drew Tranquil as a starter, because as much as he played last year, he's a starter, even though Willie Gay was technically another starter. And
right.
And this probably signals, I mean, it's another indication that Willie Gay is probably not going to be back in Kansas City. We'll see how the market plays out for him, but that's at least we get that indication. But now the Chiefs have locked up two more starters for that defense that obviously is coming off an absolutely fantastic season, but there's still two other positions where they're going to be looking at, they would be looking at right now at possibly starting the 2024 season without their starters back. And as we look forward to what's next for the Chiefs, that's kind of where I wanted to go. Jarius Sneed's obviously one of those. Yeah. That's the biggest one. Technically under contract right now, but in limbo, because we don't know right now if Jarius Sneed is going to be a Chief or not, if he's going to be traded, if there's going to be a deal. It seems like obviously the least likely and most undesirable of option for the Chiefs is that Jarius Sneed remains under that franchise for very long tag, because they just don't have the money to afford it. And that actually is affecting Chris Jones. I mean, one of the reasons we don't have the full details on Chris is that the Chiefs don't have the money right now to fit the Chris Jones contract and the salary cap, more than likely. The best estimate I think I've seen from Spotrac is that, you know, they have maybe $7.5 million under the salary cap right now, which could maybe conceivably fit Chris under for year one, but it would be really, really tough with $95 million guaranteed. Where did the Chiefs go next with Jarius Sneed? What needs to happen, and what's kind of the time frame for you?
Yeah, when Jalen Johnson got done, I feel like that kind of really gave leverage to what the Chiefs may need to do from a trade perspective. Is now that Jalen's off the market, I mean, it's Jarius Sneed and a whole bunch of other guys. And, like, that's where it's at, unless somebody unexpectedly gets released over the next 3 days. Like, you got to go through the Chiefs if you want to get an impact corner at this stage in the game. Otherwise, you're waiting until free agency. So, for me, I think the Chiefs have a – we'll see what a team's willing to offer, but I think the Chiefs have a chance here to be able to get some quality day two picks for them, and maybe it's a day two pick and a day three pick, and maybe it's a I personally think it'll be there. I'll be surprised that they're having to settle for a three. That would tremendously surprise me, especially with Johnson off the market. But with Snead, you really, I hate to say this, but you really don't want to sneak in too early on that one and really kind of outbid yourself, because here's, I'm just going to give some scenarios, Matt. This is me just spitballing here. The teams that I think Snead makes the most sense for is the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals, he makes a ton of sense. Eagles, it makes a lot of sense, but we'll see what they end up, whatever Vic Fangio ends up getting out there, how quickly they get Justin Simmons and what they're trying to do with their defensive overhaul. And the reason I say that is because if the Eagles are able to get rid of their defensive ends and swap them out with Reddick and with Sweat, then if they move on from them, what picks do they get in return, and how much more ammo do they have that maybe they can parlay it into Snead if they want to, or, you know, potentially there. I think the Lions are going to be a heavy contender for me personally. And then when I'm looking at draft capital, another team I'm really intrigued by is going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars and what they potentially want to do. So at the end of the day, though, I'm just using these three or these four teams in perspective. I know it's been reported before that there allegedly might be a mystery team and everything, and that's completely fine. But if I'm in Brett Veach's shoes right now, especially with Johnson off the market, and the other part that's going to potentially do it is, among the teams that are interested, how quickly does somebody else they want go off the board at another position that they were willing to pay the number to? And then if that happens during the tampering period for Monday and Tuesday, the legal tampering period, then maybe they're like, okay, then let's spend that money on Snead now because we didn't get such and such and such and such. So let's go invest that in Snead now. And so I think that's part of the other little bit of the waiting process right now, is that teams are, until they know the final number on a couple different players, they're all kind of willing to wait because they know the Chiefs are going to hold his rights and they would trade him. So they know they don't have to act immediately on that. They have a couple days grace period wise, Monday, Tuesday, until they have to make a play on Wednesday if that's what they want to do. So the sneaky way I'd go about it is, I love the draft capital that the Cardinals have to be able to make something work to where, you know, you could get something in that part. Another, I'm intrigued to see what the Jaguars, like what they could potentially be able to get out of Jacksonville. I think that's another spot where I think they could maneuver pick-wise with the Chiefs to be able to give the Chiefs something that gives them a lot of bang for their buck in terms of putting them in a position in that second round. Because when I'm looking at all this, the biggest thing I keep looking at with Snead is where can the Chiefs position themselves with these that can allow them the flexibility that they need, whether it be in that high second round. Can they get a two and a three out of it? If they can get that, that's fantastic. But I mean, hey, I'm also intrigued to see what the Rams do, because the Rams are always reckless with picks. And then if you get the Rams involved in it, then that forces the Cardinals to divvy up a little bit more. And then any other team that may have been interested that we mentioned or we don't know about right now, then maybe that forces them to raise their price too. But yeah, that's a market that I'm really interested to see how that kind of shakes out over the next 3 days.
I mean, the Chiefs have things that they can do to free up cap space. I mean, right now we're talking about them really not having, especially with the Jones deal done, not having a lot of flexibility or maneuvering to do anything in the first wave of free agency, which, you know, with the negotiation window, we're really talking about maybe, you know, Monday through Thursday. Now, they could open up some space. I mean, converting Mahomes' roster bonus, which they can do, into a signing bonus, they can do any amount of that. Normally, in the last few years, the Chiefs have merely just converted as much of that as they need. Now, they could, if they converted the whole thing, free up as much as $27.9 million in cap space. I don't know. I don't believe that that is their inclination. I think they've got a number in mind about how much of that they do want to convert, and I'm sure it's less than that. But, you know, the Snead, I mean, the 19.08 is a big deal. You know, you're talking about, you know, trades and what's possible and what might happen. I think we sound like we're on the same page here. I mean, this is probably something that with Snead needs to be resolved in the next 4 or 5 days tops.
Yeah, you need it done during the first week. Like, you need that cap space back. And once you got Chris officially signed, sealed, and delivered, then you can manipulate what you need to with Mahomes' number at that point. And then, you know, but yeah, like you said, I mean, the tightrope you always have with Patrick's contract is you don't want to take more away than you have to. Because all you're doing is just kicking the can down the road on other years that you really don't want to if you don't have to. So you don't just pull $30 million from it to pull $30 million from it. I mean, can you do that? Can you do cap carryover and everything? Sure. I mean, yes, in theory you can do that, but at some point you would like to eat the full number some of those years so that you don't really have to kind of, you know, do more extensions that have to stretch this number out and this number out cap wise and try to cook the books in some ways that you would have to overall. So yeah, I think that and also from a leverage perspective, if I'm in the Chiefs' shoes, I don't just pull from Mahomes' deal and show that there's all this cap room so that Chris Jones's agents are like, well, you got all that cap room, why don't you use it? Like, you don't give other agents that level of leverage. You can't do that if you're doing a smart business. So that's the other part of it. And for some of the free agents that the Chiefs may be interested in, you don't want to give maximum cap amount because, you know, like that's just not smart business to do that. I mean, that's the other strategy to where, say, there's a free agent that's out there and, you know, like, well, he'd love to come here, but he's got to come here at this number. And you're like, well, this is all we got right now, so we can't get X, Y, and Z done. So it's just that tightrope that you have overall in terms of, you know, what you may do. If they do finally move some of Mahomes' number, they know exactly where it's going and where it's getting allotted to. And it's just like that Drew Tranquil situation. Those are the pursers that tell you, or the little checkpoints that are like, okay, they know what they're doing with this, this, and this.
That's why and I circle back to what we talked about at the beginning with Chris Jones. That's why the Jones deal to me is such a huge deal because, you know, I would be worried about 24, but the guys at One O'Hara Drive aren't paid to worry about only 24.
Right.
They're worried about every year down the road. And so you take $95 million the first year, 3 years guaranteed for Chris Jones. That's, you know, one, we know there will probably be a fairly low number cap for 24. But that means that, Chris is going to have a pretty huge cap number for 25 and 26.
Right.
And there's going to be money on 27 and 28. You know, are those years that Chris Jones even ever sees? You know, I mean, you got to think about, hey, if you're Brett Veach, what does that, you know, parting ways with Chris Jones in 27 look like? Is he a June 1 cut, you know, or do you keep him until 28? So, you know, because you can't carry that on the books until June. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into those contract developments. And that's why, you know, how Chris, you know, hits the cap in the next couple of years absolutely impacts what you do with Mahomes, because as you've mentioned, you know, those two players in the next three seasons are going to take up a huge amount of your cap space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Depending how it's structured, they alone are going to take up probably more than $80 million of it.
Yeah. I'm sure Chris Shea's calculator exploded over the weekend, but
I hope not. And if he did, I hope he's got a backup calculator behind.
He's got backup calculators, so he's good there.
Yeah.
That's one starting position with Snead kind of knocked down. The other one, you know, is a little bit trickier because at defensive end, it's not that the Chiefs don't have guys under contract. It's just that Charles Omenihu is absolutely more than likely going to start the season on the PUP list and won't be ready for the beginning of the year. So your starter opposite George Karlaftis is probably Felix Anagyike Uzomah. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a concern for me, might be a concern for some others, but you know, how important is it for the Chiefs to address that? You know, if you feel like whether it's in the first wave or the second wave of free agency.
That defensive line wise, unless here's where it changes for me. If Joey Bosa or Khalil Mack get released, Khalil Mack's got a lot left in the tank, both as a run defender and the strength that he still has, to where you're going to have to pay him a certain number, and it's probably going to be at least $10 million a year. Are you willing to do that? Can you do that? Somebody like Bosa, you're going to have to look at the medicals and everything, but he's still a premium guy. He just gets hurt. So, like, was that something you would want to invest in either? So, I know the Chargers are, you know, the report that was out there was that the Chargers are shopping, are open to trading all of them. Well, they're going to release them before Wednesday. Like, it's going to happen. And, like, Harbaugh has no attachment to anybody out there except maybe Justin Herbert, which is the reason he took the job out there. So, like, you know, Harbaugh is going to build that offense in his image, and it's going to be a powerful offensive line. And that's the first thing he's going to build, and then he will build out from there. And then that's what's going to happen. So for the Chiefs, I mean, you're going to need a defensive line that can be able to hold up over the next 3 years against that stout of an offensive line, both in run and pass. And so that's where Anagyike Uzomah is going to get better as a run defender if he wants to be able to stay on the field. And then that's, you know, you may need somebody that can be a strong run defender to help him out while he's more of a pass rushing specialist until he gets to that certain level. Karlaftis is already capable of being both, but Karlaftis gets hurt. Like you still need rotational pass rush. You still need to draft somebody you can develop, whether that's a defensive tackle, which is my pick, and defensive end. Like, you know, I'm not banking on BJ Thompson, and that's not disrespect to him. It's just, You can't bank on anything. Like, you've always got to be willing to add and improve and get better at every single position. So that's why I still, whenever I'm doing my mock drafts online and I'm running through the scenarios and everything, which I've been doing a lot, Matt, very addicting for me. Defensive line, I always magically have 2 to 3 people that I've drafted on the D line. So, well, yeah, it's not a coincidence. Just like I always have like 2 offensive linemen and a couple of receivers. So, so I mean, like, that's kind of where my mentality and wheelhouse is on it all. But yeah, I mean, we'll, you know, I don't think there's necessarily going to be a premium pass rusher out there, but from our past, only talked about a couple guys that I think you could get in that second and third wave that could kind of rotate in there and kind of be able to make a difference, but not necessarily break the bank. But somebody like Khalil Mack or Joey Bosa, if they got released, that's somebody you really do think about potentially breaking the bank for. And it's not just name. It's just like them with Joe Cullen creates a lot of fun very quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like that, you know, we're talking about what the Chiefs do next, and we're talking about the opening of the negotiation window. I mean, to a degree, the Chiefs have already made their big splashes in the first wave of free agency, because keeping Chris Jones and keeping Drew Tranquil.
Yeah.
Are two things that a lot of other teams haven't done of anything of that nature, of keeping free agents of that caliber. So, I mean, that's one step that they're maybe already ahead. And, you know, and so to me, if I'm Brett Veach, I don't know that he would do this, but I don't know if he's got a dry erase board about for free agency there in the war room, but
just don't turn it towards the cameras whenever you're doing a press conference like the Browns did.
I think I'd go in there Wednesday, you know, morning and say, hey, if you know, free agency officially opens tonight, but hey, our number one signing was Chris Jones and number two was Drew Tranquil. Look what we've already done.
I mean, but let's be honest, Matt, by Wednesday, it's already the second wave of free agency.
It really is starting to get that way.
Like, I mean, with the way things go, like the first wave of free agency is on Monday.
It really is starting to be that way.
And then the leftovers is on Tuesday. And by the time free agency technically starts on Wednesday, is unless there's a surprise team, like when the Chiefs got Joe Tooney, when it formally started, yeah. Like there's very rarely anything that can kind of, you know, they catch you by surprise. So at that, by Friday, you're in musical chair mode in free agency these days, the way it's set up to where you're just trying to go find a chair pretty quickly and try to find a multi-year deal. But if you're past this upcoming Friday without a deal, you're on that prove it. If you get into the weekend and you don't have a deal done on a multi-year, you're in pure prove it mode from there on out, and you're just trying to take a 1 year with some incentives, an escalator, you know, some incentives in there, maybe this happens or this has an option to it or something like that. So it'll be, yeah, it feels like by the time free agency technically hits at 3 after the past couple of years, it feels like Christmas morning, all the packages have already been opened, and like there's just, you know, there's really nothing left to open at that point.
But there's sales, you know, you get all the after Christmas sales. That's really when they start.
It really is.
Wednesday night and Thursday. I mean, that's when you're out at 5 a.m. on December 26th trying to find out what's 50% off.
Yeah. It's a solid point there, Matt. I can't dispute it, sir.
I don't. Might be some safeties out there at some really ridiculous prices.
Yeah.
I would imagine, Nick, my prediction is that a week from now, we will probably, I don't know if we'll be talking about any new Chiefs. I mean, I kind of, we might be talking about a couple of Chiefs sticking around. Wouldn't surprise me if maybe, you know, by next Sunday that maybe that's already reached that point where a couple of Chiefs tested the market and they're like, wait a minute, we probably need to stay in KC. Or now that the Chiefs have gotten Chris Jones done and have to get L'Jarius Sneed done, then there's a couple of their own guys that they can wrap up. I think I would be surprised if they go out and make a big investment in somebody else. What about you?
Well, I mean, for me, I And I'm not saying like a massive $20 million a year, you know, per year offer. But I am intrigued to see what the Chiefs get done at wide receiver by Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Is there somebody that they get done that's at a level that you're like, okay, they were able to get him done at, you know, at $12 million or $8 million or $5 million with incentives or whatever they end up doing. Like that's where my antennas will be perked up. By Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is what they potentially do there. Because if they want to get, I know it got asked on Twitter when they were asking about wide receiver and Calvin Ridley, that the fact we didn't talk about him. Part of the reason I didn't talk about him was because he's had struggles with press coverage, and that's kind of why he disappeared at times. Whenever teams started pressing the Jaguars a little bit more in spots, and he seemed to struggle with that versus when he was playing a lot of off zone coverage against him. And he was really able to kind of work defenses pretty well. That's the question I think the Chiefs got to ask themselves on that front. And with him also being in that 29 range, you know, age wise, like you don't, if he came down number wise to where I think he actually is going to get you're going to get the most bang for your buck. That's kind of one of those Thursday, Friday deals, you know, this upcoming week type of thing to where, hey, if you get him to 10 to 12 million, no, I'm not going to be upset by that. But I mean, if there's a team that's willing to pay him 20 out there at 29 years old, then you let him. You let him go ahead and do that. And with somebody like Marquise Brown, I made my breakdown on him last week, but like that's another guy that I think somebody's going to pay and they're going to be disappointed in some of the competitiveness of and it may have been the situation in Arizona. And you've got to be able to kind of talk to that player in person and kind of get that vibe from them about why this happened, why that happened, if you're going to comfortably invest in them in that regard. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see what happens with the receiver. Is there a surprise at offensive tackle that becomes available before then? Is there a surprise pass rushing-wise that becomes available before, you know, before Friday that the Chiefs can work with? And then for me, I'm going to be waiting to see where DeAndre Swift ends up. I'm interested to see what Barkley's market ends up being if he does get the full $10 million per year that I, or more that I'm sure he's after. Oh, and then does DeAndre Swift end up in that? Where does DeAndre Swift and even Austin Eckler end up? And do they get $6 million per year? Are they able to take less? And are the Chiefs willing to? Because I personally think for the Chiefs, if they can find another veteran pass rusher at a good price, a couple veteran receivers that they can add, and then a running back, I'll feel real comfortable going into the draft at how versatile they'll be able to be, and they won't be pressured into a situation. But that will kind of help raise up offensive tackle and where they may need to draft an offensive tackle. And depending what receiver they get will determine probably do they take a receiver in the first and if the certain impact guy becomes available, or can they maneuver somewhere in the second to get the guy that they want? Because I can tell you from running some of those mocks, there's pockets receiver wise that it's projecting, and it doesn't mean that that's the reality of what it's going to be, but a lot of quality wide receivers definitely get off the board by the end of the second round on some of those simulators that I've run at multiple websites, just because I like to see different things and think where computers think things are going to go by team needs, even though I don't think they always draft by what characteristics teams are actually after. So like, you know, you gotta kind of take it with a grain of salt, but yeah, I mean, I know people are going to ask this question a lot, but I'm just telling you, if I'm the Chiefs, offensive line, wide receiver, defensive line, that's where I put my personal draft picks in if I'm in the Chiefs' shoes.
I agree on all of those, and I am going to place one off the radar,
yeah,
spot. And you know, you probably already know which phase of the game that I got here in my eye.
Okay.
Because right now, Nick, the Chiefs don't have a long snapper under contract for 2024.
That was not on my radar, but I totally get it.
I mean, if you're the Chiefs, you don't want to lose the Super Bowl because of a bad snap in Super Bowl 59.
Yeah.
So, I mean, either you're getting something done with James Winchester, or you better have somebody in mind that is your next long snapper, because that's not a position that you really want to take any chances with.
Right. So,
if you're a contending team.
Well, Matt, I think there's plenty of time to get that done. I think there's plentiful options out there. But yes, it is definitely something that, you know, I think will be on the Chiefs' radar. It just may not be at the forefront.
Oh, I am sure there's somebody in that room pounding the table saying we need a long snapper.
Yeah, and I think his name's Dave Tobe.
Well, you know, we've gotten to the long snapper discussion. I guess we've exhausted the topics for this week. But we will be back next Sunday in your feed, and we will be looking at the first week of free agency. I also can't wait, because we will also, it will be probably one of my more favorite discussions, is going to be looking at who's available next Sunday that the Chiefs need to be going after, because that's when you can really start having some fun. And, you know, remember, I mean, that would have been the time you could have looked at the board and said, hey, you know what, Drew Tranquil and Mike Edwards are available. Those are a couple of guys maybe the Chiefs need to be circling. We'll be talking about those guys next week, and who are the veterans that have slipped through the first wave or two of free agency that the Chiefs should go after. So, Nick, any parting words, any parting thoughts for this week?
Yeah, it's not Chiefs related, but obviously for people that wonder, my grandpa had passed away last week, so that was why I wasn't on the Q&A. So it's been a unique week.
Well, the thoughts and prayers of, I know, myself and everybody else who's a big fan of yours, Nick, is thinking of you and your family right now. We've got lots of stuff this week, so we will catch up with you. But as always, Nick.
Yeah. Till next time, I bid you adieu.
You've been listening to 41 is the Mic, presented by KSHB 41, your home of the Chiefs and Chiefs Digest.